Chapter 6. Nikki. Notes. Content warning. Brief discussion of extremist/supremacist violence. After 3 days following scientists around labs and feigning interest in the arcane complexities of xenogenetics, Nikki is ready to resort to medieval methods of interrogation in order to get the answers they seek. "My love," Joe says fondly, when he expresses this sentiment in the privacy of their shared guest suite at the New Vulcan Science Academy. "I have seen you stake out a single position with your rifle for a full week straight without complaint or any lapse in focus." "That is different," Nikki grumbles, flopping down beside him on the bed. Vulcans apparently favor mattresses so firm they may as well be slabs of stone, which does not improve his mood. "Stakeouts are a kind of meditation. I can turn the rest of my mind off. But here I must appear to be fully engaged at all times, and ask intelligent questions. Remind me how many medical degrees you've acquired over the centuries." Nikki shoves at him, not very gently. "Battlefield medicine is a far cry from endless hours peering through microscopes, and significantly more exciting." He rolls over onto his side, propping his head up on his arm to look at Joe properly. "Any progress on your end?" "Observing Captain Kirk's ongoing charm assault on the Vulcan elders is at least entertaining," Joe says, lips quirking. "But no actionable results yet. This T'Pring might as well not exist at all." "Someone must know where she is. It's still a relatively small colony." "But a large planet," Joe points out, "and the Vulcans have been very selective about what parts of it off-worlders can access, even official representatives of the very Federation they helped found." Nikki sighs, pressing a kiss against Joe's shoulder. "So I've noticed. Well, Team Science is getting a field trip to some research station in the middle of the desert tomorrow, leaving at dawn." "You'd better get some rest then," Joe teases. He's already palming the small of Nikki's back beneath the soft fabric of his t-shirt. In a bit." Nikki scooches closer, tilting his head up for a proper kiss. Joe, of course, indulges him, threading his fingers through Nikki's hair. It's nice to have a private room while on a mission. Almost makes the long, tedious days worthwhile. They're interrupted by a familiar pattern of knocks on the door. Joe whines his protest against Nikki's mouth, but Nikki drags himself away with a sigh. At least they hadn't gotten to the naked portion of the evening yet. "Niall," he says, as he opens the door. "This had better be important." She folds her arms across her chest, unimpressed. "It is. Get dressed. Stealth gear, not uniforms. And, she gestures vaguely around her own head with a smirk. "You might want to do something about your hair. Having a good night, were we?" Nikki sighs, but he can feel his lips twitching despite himself. "Be grateful you did not arrive 10 minutes later. Like I haven't seen it already. Anyway, we're meeting out back in like 2 minutes. Booker has a lead on T'Pring." Within 10 minutes, all 5 of them are packed into one of the VSA's dune buggies, skimming across the red desert sands. The night is cool and clear, lit only by twin moons and a glittering canopy of unfamiliar constellations. No light pollution out here in the desert, Nikki thinks approvingly. He always finds the stars more brilliant as seen from the ground, rather than through the windows of a starship. The blackness of space feels all-encompassing when he's drifting out in it. With solid earth beneath his feet, he can better appreciate their beauty. "I dreamed again last night," Booker explains, as Joe steers them toward the coordinates he'd provided. "She was out in the desert, with those mountain peaks behind her. There was an elaborate edifice carved directly into the rock face. So, I spent my day digging into local architecture projects. The Federation provided resources to get the new capital built within that first year of the colony's establishment, but there are still quite a few ongoing construction projects across this continent." "Including a monastery at the base of that mountain," Niall adds. "It's still a work in progress, but very much inhabitable. And one wing is currently devoted to hospice and rehabilitation." Nikki hums in thought. Spock mentioned that T'Pring specialized in rehabilitation and counseling. Perhaps that's the connection. It's also a good place to hide someone who should have been badly injured in a laboratory accident, at least until enough time has passed to justify her recovery, Quinn points out. I wonder what game she's playing here. If she's being held there against her will, we ought to get a sense of that from her dreams. Booker shrugs. Depends on what sort of coercion they're using, if any. She wasn't physically restrained when I dreamt of her. Do our Starfleet friends know about our little expedition tonight? Joe asks lightly, not taking his eyes off the sand stretching out before them. I gave Jim the heads up that we were pursuing a possible lead, Booker says, left Spock up to him. Good, Niall says. Better not to involve them until we're sure. And I have no interest in any old relationship drama. Spock and T'Pring can sort that shit out on their own time. We've got more important things to discuss. Nikki nods. And better without an outside audience. He had not relished the prospect of dancing around the topic of their shared immortality with Jim present, let alone Spock. This option is vastly preferable. It must be nearly midnight by the time they reach the Vulcan monastery built into the side of the mountain. An impressive sight to behold, indeed. It reminds Nikki somewhat of the ancient ruins of Petra, back on Earth, with the red rock face and elaborate carvings. And yet, somehow entirely alien in its design, in a way he can't quite put his finger on. Perhaps Joe will find the words to describe it later. He's always had a knack for poetry. They park the buggy in a hollow between two massive slabs of sandstone, as unobtrusive a spot as they can find in the dark shadow of the mountain. One of the moons has sunk toward the horizon line, hidden behind the mountain peaks. The other still shines overhead. Next question, Joe says. How the hell do we sneak inside? You don't, an unfamiliar woman's voice says from behind them. Nikki reacts on instinct, his body moving without conscious thought, whirling around with his phaser drawn and aimed before his mind has a chance to catch up. The others respond in much the same manner. He recognizes the woman a moment later and lowers his weapon. Greetings, T'Pring says, raising her hand in the Vulcan salute. Her dark eyes gleam in the starlight. I have been expecting you. She does not lead them into the monastery itself, but instead to a sort of desert garden arranged along one of the outer walls. It has a stark beauty that Nikki finds appealing. They select a secluded spot where benches are tucked in among a grove of tall cactus-like plants and settle in to talk. After Niall has introduced them, T'Pring regards them gravely. So you are all human. I couldn't be sure from the dreams. All human and Terran by birth, Niall confirms. You're the first of us to come from any other planet, let alone another species. The first of us, T'Pring echoes, as though tasting the word. Are we united by more than these shared dreams? We're united by our immortality, Joe says. His voice is gentle. Our bodies heal far more quickly than other beings. If we die, we heal from that as well. T'Pring nods slowly. So I have found. I have not had the opportunity to truly test its limits yet, but it would be illogical to dismiss the evidence of my own body. You call it immortality. Is that due to the human propensity for hyperbole, or a literal fact? It's the closest word we have to describe it, anyway, Niall says wryly. You can run as many tests as you like on yourself, we've all been there, but the fact of the matter is, there are no limits. Technically, we can die. You did in that lab explosion, but we always wake up again eventually. Until we don't, Nikki thinks with a pang, but that part of it can wait. The manner of one's death has no impact on this outcome. I don't recommend decapitation, Booker remarks. That's the least fun to come back from, in my opinion. But no, it doesn't matter how it happens, we still bounce right back from it. T'Pring glances between them shrewdly. What of illness, or simple old age? In my experience, we generally only die of any given disease once, Quinn says. Our bodies seem to figure out how to heal from it after that, and we do not physically age after our first death. We are all much older than we appear, even by Vulcan standards. Niall gives a little wave. I was the youngest before you turned up, and I'm currently pushing 270. Booker, You're almost 500 years old by now, right? You gotta let me know when to celebrate the half millennium. Don't remind me, Booker grumbles. Joe and I have been together for nearly 12 centuries, Nikki continues, exchanging a quick smile with him. And Quinn? Quinn prefers not to calculate her exact age, Quinn says primly. I hate math. Nikki offers to Pring what he hopes is a reassuring smile. Please understand, we do not wish to frighten you, but you deserve to know the truth about who you are now. I appreciate your candor, T'Pring says, neither her tone nor her expression betraying her feelings. You have given me much to consider, but I have spent a great deal of time of late reevaluating many truths I once held as immutable. She's not just referring to her death and resurrection. We grieve with thee, Quinn tells her, one of the few phrases in the Vulcan language that Nikki recognizes. She says it simply and without undue emotion. T'Pring gives her an unreadable look, then nods. They all sit together quietly for long minutes, listening to the sounds of the desert night. A low wind whispers through the sands. Nikki lets his palm rest upon the stone bench beside him and enjoys the warmth of Joe's fingers brushing against his. Eventually, Niall breaks the silence. I'm impressed by how quickly you're rolling with all this. It took me a hell of a lot longer to accept what was happening to me. Let alone grasping the truth in the dreams, Nikki agrees. It was many months before I first understood that they were more than figments of my imagination or demonic visions sent to plague me. T'Pring does not shrug, but something in her expression gives the impression of it all the same. There was a sharpness and specificity to them that lingered with me even after waking. I found that curious, and then I saw you with Spock and could make out fragments of your conversation. My subconscious mind would not have conjured that. She tilts her head ever so slightly as she considers them. My hypothesis is that the dreams are a form of telepathy, otherwise latent in your species, but somehow triggered by the physiological changes that you term immortality. That's right. Nikki had forgotten that Vulcans as a species were mildly telepathic. Touch telepaths only, if he recalls correctly, though the bonding that Spock mentioned was also a form of telepathic link between two bonded individuals. It makes sense that T'Pring would draw that conclusion. The dreams stop once we meet, he tells her, so I'm afraid you won't be able to test that hypothesis further, or at least not until a new immortal awakens, but that may not be for many centuries. Fascinating, T'Pring murmurs. She looks as though she might say more, then presses her lips together firmly and shakes her head. There is much I would learn from you, but the hour is late and I cannot spare the time for philosophic discussion, and it would be best if you were not seen in this place. How long do you plan to remain on New Vulcan? As long as we need to, Niall says. You're one of us now. You are our priority, T'Pring. A tiny crease of confusion draws T'Pring's brows together. That is illogical. We are complete strangers to one another. My business is my own, and yours. She blinks. What is your business, if I may inquire? Do you serve with Starfleet? The glimpses I saw in dreams were inconclusive. We are centuries-old immortal warriors with remarkably good skin and rapid healing abilities that cannot be explained by medical science, Quinn says dryly. How long do you logically think we'd last in an organization like Starfleet? Niall gives her a quelling look, somewhat undermined by the amused twitch of her mouth. We have served in the past, she tells T'Pring, but like Quinn said, that kind of gig has a hard time limit for us. We can't settle in one place for too long without risking exposure. At the moment, we fly an independent vessel. To what purpose? To help people, wherever we can. Niall glances over at Nikki for a moment, a smile flickering briefly across her face. We fight for what we think is right. That is an exceedingly unspecific mission statement, T'Pring informs them. It's definitely a work in progress, but it gives us the freedom to adapt to changing circumstances. Like, for example, dreaming of a Vulcan woman dying in a mysterious lab explosion. Niall leans forward, hands braced on her thighs. What's going on at the VSA, T'Pring, and what can we do to help? This brings T'Pring pause. After a moment, she rises jerkily to her feet, hands clenched at her sides as she paces, then turns to face them. It's the most overt indication of her emotional state she's yet displayed. My first death, yes. And what a strange phrase that is to utter. She shakes her head briskly. Irrelevant. So, the explosion in that laboratory was not accidental. We were wondering about that, Joe says. Do you know what caused it? She gives him a dry look. I don't believe you are asking me to explain the nature of combustion. What caused it is trivial. The correct question would be who caused it. And while I do not yet have a specific answer, I can give you a more generalized one. Have you heard of the logic extremists? Quinn reacts to that. A small separatist faction among Vulcans, from what I recall. Xenophobic fanatics who rejected the premise of the Federation, who would place Vulcans above all other species. That ideology persists even now. Now more than ever, T'Pring says grimly. On Vulcan that was, they represented only a minuscule faction of our people. But with the catastrophe, and the Federation's inability to prevent it, we are all grieving. That grief takes many forms. Misplaced anger is a common psychological reaction to trauma. These extremists provide what they present as a logical outlet for that rage. Nikki can't help but look to Joe, an echo of ancient guilt flaring up like a phantom wound. As always, Joe is already there, looking right back at him. He links his pinky finger with Nikki's on the bench between them. We are all too familiar with that pattern, Nikki says aloud. So the explosion was an act of domestic terrorism, essentially. What was their aim? T'Pring purses her lips. The target was a genetics lab. For context, you must realize that Vulcans are now functionally an endangered species. Much of our collective purpose as a colony has been focused on repopulation efforts. As scientists, we must be open to exploring all possibilities that might feasibly forward this effort, including enhancing our genetic compatibility with other closely related species. Ah, Booker says, hybridization. I would imagine these Vulcan supremacist types would not approve of that. There were concerns about the potential for such an attack, T'Pring confirms, as well as possible infiltration of the VSA by one of these extremists. One of their lead scientists had me placed in the genetics research station to attempt to identify the mole. She smooths down the hem of her cloak, gaze distant. I do not believe it was coincidental that I was present in the lab when the explosion occurred. Is that why you're hidden away here in the monastery? Niall asks. For your own safety. T'Pring shakes her head. My safety is irrelevant, given my newfound abilities. However, it continues to be the one significant advantage I have over these extremists. They believe me dead. I just need to determine the way to leverage it. I doubt they will stop at simply blowing up one laboratory. My concern is that they may have sympathizers placed close to the Vulcan High Council itself. If their ideology were to gain any real traction amongst the Council... Niall laces her fingers together, thinking aloud. Is there a way to draw them out, expose the true nature of the threat? Force them to make a move, out in the open, in a way that cannot simply be hushed over, Quinn agrees. You don't know the runaround the Enterprise officers have been given by your own leaders, and Spock is Vulcan himself. I realize that your people prefer not to air dirty laundry in public, but that insularity only plays into these extremists' goals. They want to isolate New Vulcan from its allies. But this is literally why your people helped found the Federation in the first place, for support and protection, even when the threat is coming from inside your own house. That's right, Spock is here as well, T'Pring murmurs, going very still, along with his ship. I gotta ask, Niall says, how the hell did you get involved in this plot in the first place? From what Spock told us, you were a counselor of some kind, not, like, Secret Service or whatever this is. His phrase was psychological counseling and rehabilitation, specifically, Nikki recalls aloud. The pieces are starting to click into place. We assumed trauma or injury, something along those lines. But when he said rehabilitation, T'Pring gives him an approving nod. I was a treatment specialist on a rehabilitation colony, criminals. I worked to rehabilitate Vulcan criminals, helping to counsel and guide them back to a path of logic. So, believe me when I say, these so-called logic extremists are in fact driven by uncontrolled emotionality. They do not plan rationally, they react. And now we have their despised Federation's flagship in orbit, bringing with it the infamous Spock, who is the half-human son of a member of the Vulcan High Council. It will present them with an irresistible target. Niall grins. Yeah, we can definitely work with that. End of chapter 6.